Growing up, Mama always said, you never know how you're going to end up. The life you have in the morning may not be the life you have when you go to bed that night. My name is Dionne Lee, and this is The Way I Am Now, the podcast that shares words of wisdom and life lessons through songs and stories. After a 24-hour delay due to a tropical storm, I sat with director Lisa Rothy, my dear friend of 30-plus years, and we talked. Well, we laughed and giggled initially, but eventually we did talk. We talked and laughed our way through the story of Pericles. Our time together can only be described as fun. Fun. And fun is not what folks typically think about when they think about a play like Pericles, but we both have a wicked sense of humor, and it sometimes, well, took hold of us. We were like we were in our college days, pretty silly as we looked at all the twists and turns of this play. But we eventually, we got to a deeper side. A fairy tale is how Lisa describes it. A fairy tale filled with magical moments and wonder. And if you can think of a play from that lens, then anything and everything is possible. And that's where we, you know, we really stopped giggling, but we held on to our sense of humor. A sense of humor is a must when examining the highs, lows, and the coincidences of this play. So we move back into our adult selves to talk about what's possible. And listening to this podcast, you have to believe in what's possible without judgment and with an acceptance of the world that is put before you. Well, that led to a discussion of this past year. Quarantine. There was human suffering like we've never known in our lifetime. Our country was protesting the loss of Black lives. Our country was politically stressed. I certainly had a lot of dark days, a lot of anxious days, a lot of meditative days, and days where I was trying to cling to my faith for dear life. I was also trying to stay hopeful in the midst of what felt like a great storm. How can I turn this all around and get through to the other side? I think that's what most folks hope for in the face of adversity. Now, Pericles' fantastical journey, this magical journey, and his tragic journey is very timely in that way. How do you live through what seems to be impossible? Well, I wonder if there will ever be a time where Lisa and I will be able to sit and giggle our way through the events of this past year. They seem as unbelievable as the stories of Pericles. Well, I suspect that we won't. But, like Pericles, we will have survived to tell it.
The thing that I loved about this is it's over a very, very long time. It's over a lifetime. As opposed to like Jason and the Argonauts, right? Where he's young and he goes here and he goes here and he goes here and you just see him as a young man. You don't. You see Pericles go from a young man, you know, with a certain amount of pride and, you know, maybe a little bit of hubris, just the sense of like, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to win this lady. And then through learning, you know, and through encountering all of these people in different situations along the way, over a lifetime, through a marriage, through a child, through losing a wife, through losing a child, through the loss, so much loss and depth. And I keep thinking about it, you know, like just get going down and down and down and down and down until finally, you know, he hits bottom. You know, Pericles along the way meets a host of minor characters. I mean, it definitely centers on Pericles, Thaisa, and marina. And then at the end, they're all reunited. So that's great. But interstitially, you know, we have to go on a journey and we have to go and meet people along the way who help you see and help Pericles see different ways of looking at the world, different ways of experiencing himself. And we kind of experience him growing up, as it were, and, you know, kind of learning a bunch of things. You know, I mean, we start with Pericles, you know, in Antioch, where he meets this man, and he's coming in like, I'm going to marry this woman. I'm going to come and I'm going to win this woman. I'm going to figure out this riddle that no one else has been ever able to figure out. And of course he realizes, oh my gosh, if I actually give the answer to the riddle, which is basically that Antiochus is having a relationship with an incestuous relationship with his daughter, he can't do that. I mean, he can't say that. I mean, you know, that's the other thing too. It's kind of also just bizarre that the entire play starts out with that scene. The play starts with incest. So we'll just start there. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that are challenging about this play. So starting with that is one of them. But, you know, if we're going to follow the journey of this man and his journey, he's like, oh, I can't answer this question. He knows what it is and he can't answer it. And he doesn't want his head up on a pike like all of the other men around him have. So he ends up going back home and he meets his friend and great advisor, Helicanus, who he basically leaves in charge of Tyre because Antiochus basically has like a henchman coming after him to kill him. So he says, Helicanus, you take care of Tyre and I'm going to go travel around. And he ends up sailing to Tarsus where he meets the governor of Tarsus and his wife, Cleon and Dionysa. And they are having a massive famine, which is fascinating that he comes to an island where there's a bunch of people who have no food. And he's like, whoa, what do I do? But he brings a boatload of food to them, says, here, I'm not coming to kill you all. I'm actually coming to bring you food. So, but he goes back on the water and there's the first shipwreck and there are multiple shipwrecks and huge storms in this story, which is why I think it's so funny that yesterday I couldn't talk to you because there was a huge storm. And I was like, you know, there's something fated about this because I lost all my power. Anyway, he meets this group of fishermen who I love. I just love the fishermen. They're delightful. This is where like the first big turn happens. We don't actually know at the end of that scene whether he's alive or dead because there's a shipwreck and he loses all his men and Gower tells us all of the everyone, you know, is gone and we don't know. And then all of a sudden we find out that he is landed on shore and he's in the sand and he hears this group of fishermen far away talking about the sea. And there's this real, like, you know, the analogy of the sea for life, you know, for what life is, because they talk about how the biggest fish in the sea swim around and they're gobbling up all the smaller ones, just like people do with each other. Pericles is listening and you can hear, he's talking to himself like, wow, these fishermen are really wise because they get there and they're using the sea as this metaphor for life and the way human beings, you know, talk to each other or are with each other in this kind of like hierarchy. But it's the fishermen who tell Pericles about good King Simonides, who is hosting this tournament. It's like a jousting tournament the next day. And whoever wins will get to marry his daughter, Thaisa. And he's like, oh, I want to do that. But he's like, well, how do I show up? Because he also he's missing his clothes also. So he's also like naked on the sea. He's like, how am I going to do that? And then miraculously, this is one of the things that I like about it too, is that when you set up like an old timey play where it's going to have a fairy tale, you can have all kinds of things that happen and you can have magic. Magic can happen. So miraculously, these buddies of his, you know, the fishermen, pull out this set of armor from the ocean. Pericles has his own aside and he realizes that it's actually it was his father's. You're like, what? And it's this rust and it's really rusty. So you're like, well, we don't really know how that happened, but we're going to go with it because we're not even going to think of it because the framework has been set up that anything can happen. So we're like, great. Okay. So now he's got this rusty armor he can go to this jousting tournament. And so he gets there and he wins the tournament. And one of the things he learns too is it's kind of like everyone is laughing at him or is making fun of him because he's got this rusty armor and he wins. So there's also something about, again, the internal and the external that come up. And, you know, just because what somebody looks like doesn't mean that's who they are, you know. Anyway, so we're all learning together as an audience. We're all like going, oh, we're all learning with Pericles. And anyway, so very quickly, so he wins the tournament. He marries Thaisa and she gets pregnant. I mean, it's like that. Boom, that happens. So they realize, they hear that Antiochus is dead. I guess Antiochus and the daughter who doesn't even have a name that he was in this incestuous relationship with have died in some fiery explosion with related to the gods or something. So he's like, okay, great. We're going to go back. So they go back home. They're going to go back to Tyre. And of course, another storm hits. And Thaisa goes into labor on the ship and she dies in childbirth. And there's a superstition on the ships that you can't have a dead body. It's bad luck. So the sailors basically say, you've got to throw this body overboard. You've got to get rid of this body. And he's like, oh my God. Okay. All right. So he does. And somehow there's like a fresh casket that's already ready and caulked and ready to go in the ship. I guess they're just waiting for these kinds of events, right? Just to be prepared. So he writes a little note, probably puts it in a bottle so it doesn't get wet, leaves some jewels, leaves some coins, you know, and for anybody who maybe hopefully someday might come up with her and realize who, you know, who she might be. Anyway, so that happens. And he realizes, I mean, you know, so here's a man on a ship with a baby. Where's the breast milk? Where's the formula? There's no formula. How do I do this? So he goes back to Tarsus with Cleon and Dionysa and leaves the baby, Marina, who's been named Marina because she was born in the sea. And since Cleon and Dionysa owe him, essentially, for ending the famine, so they leave. So they're like, okay, great. Anyway, meanwhile, Thaisa wakes up in Ephesus, where this healer, Cerimon, lives. And so they find this casket, they bring it in, and they open it up. They see there's a dead body in there. But then he notices, as a healer, that her body is awfully, like, fresh, you know, for a corpse. So he's like, oh, okay. And this is where this next part of magic comes in. And, you know, we don't really know necessarily. I think it's a choice about whether, you know, how he, if he brought her back from the dead or if she was just unconscious or whatever the heck happened. But, you know, he basically gets his herbs and he's, you know, mixing things up. And also he asks for music to be played. Music is also, I mean, this could be a whole other conversation about music and the role that music plays in this. There's a lot of it. But and in this instance, there he asks his assistant to play some music. And so there's this wonderful moment where they're all waiting to see if she's going to, what's going to happen. And so the music happens and he says, play that strain again. And it plays. And then she breathes and is suddenly awake and alive. And they're actually talking about how amazing Cerimon is and how this is going to be something that everyone's going to know about. And it's going to really make a name for him and not, but he doesn't really care about those things. He's like, whatever, I'm just much more interested in helping the people. Anyway, so that happens. I mean, you know, this is kind of a plot thing, but these are the people along the way. But I do, there is something about these moments of magic also throughout. And this word wonder that comes up a lot, this idea of wonder, that is something that also Ellen really picked up on beautifully, I think. So along with all of these trials and tribulations of a human life, that also there's these moments of hope and wonder and inspiration that come in throughout the story that I think is really beautiful. And when you're paying attention to the signs, right? When you're actually paying attention and you're like, you know, connected to the divine, that there are these moments that you're like, oh, look at that. Oh, that has a message for me. Or there's, you know, something that can connect you to something larger. I mean, these are some of the things along the way that maybe could help us, you know, as we move forward in human, you know, as human beings on this planet.
In this production of Pericles, music is its own character. Lisa talks specifically about the role music plays in telling this story. Her song choice, like our conversation, is fun, spirited, and just right. Just right.
Before I talk about this specific song, I want to go back and actually talk about music again for a moment. That in very, you know, kind of toward, I mean, we're like 4/5 of the way through the play, that there is this reunion scene with Pericles and Marina, and where he has gone, he's in his internal retreat, right? He's retreated, and he has his, he, I don't know, it seems like he hasn't bathed, he hasn't spoken to anybody. He's like in the bowels of the ship. He's just in a dark room, you know, in a really internal place. It feels very much like living inside the dark night of the soul. Miraculously, of course, happens that they're on, you know, they're Lysimachus's island. Okay, so the governor of Mytilene, which happens to be Lysimachus. So we're like, oh, Lysimachus, great. We know that guy because he was the one who tried to buy Marina. Anyway, so here they are. They're on Mytilene. Magically, after a rough storm with Pericles, because he's realized that his daughter is dead, shows up also on Mytilene, and they're kind of in the, you know, moored there. That like Lysimachus shows up to the ship and meets the person on the ship and was like, hey, what are you guys doing in here? And he's like, well, there's a man who's down here and he's a king and he hasn't spoken or seen anybody and he's in bad shape. And Lysimachus is like, oh, I think I know the perfect person to bring him out of this. And he goes and he gets Marina, brings her back on the ship and brings her into the hold where Pericles is on the ship. And she sings to him. And there's something, again, very wondrous and magical, beautiful. Again, there's like this, like the divine feminine comes into the room to breathe life into this man who has been locked away internally for a very long time. And of course, it is his daughter. And that there's something miraculous and beautiful and very moving about this. And Rindy Eckert is the composer and I think did such a beautiful job composing this song. And for Jenny, who ends up singing it, and Ellen, who wrote the lyrics, there was a, I'm not exactly sure what the original song was, but it was very clunky. And so we're like looking for something a little bit softer and gentler and a little bit more Marina's voice, as opposed to a song that was written probably not even by Shakespeare. It wasn't written by Shakespeare, but it was written by a man at the time, and he co-opted this song. Anyway, so she sings to him and kind of brings him out of this, and they recognize each other and have a reunion. He falls asleep, and again, he said, but he has after, right after the reunion, he says, oh, that music, what is that amazing, beautiful music? And they're all like, what are you talking about? He's like, the music of the spheres. I hear it. Don't you hear it? And they're like, we don't hear it. And so music plays a really important part in the trajectory of this story and bringing us from one place to another. So anyway, I just wanted to talk about that. And then when we get to Ephesus and Diana, you know, once we get to the temple, there are also these nuns basically who are there, who are like intoning. And so there's also this music there, this very healing, beautiful, warm, expansive music that is infusing with some, there's some spirituality there. And that is really kind of, I think, this thing about bringing together and creating wholeness. You know, this play that's all about transformation and forgiveness also. And I was once, and then he's reunited with Thaisa there. And after going through all of this, I started looking for a song that is like about hope and courage for people who've experienced adversity in their lives, but who have overcome it, mm-hmm. and came across a song that was from my childhood that I remembered. I know I am a child of the 70s. was the song, I Can See Clearly Now. I can see clearly now the rain has gone. I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. And I can make it now the pain is gone and all the bad feelings have disappeared. Here's that rainbow I've been playing for. It's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. I think that on the surface, it could seem really simple, but there's really something quite deep and profound about making the choice after you've gone through all of this, make that choice to go, to take that breath and to see, and to see things fully, not letting go, not spiritually bypassing or anything, and being like, oh my God, everything's great. But to acknowledge that you've actually gone to some pretty deep, dark places and that there's something on the other side. It's very redemptive.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. It's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is the rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. Look all around, there's nothing but blue skies. Look straight ahead, nothing but blue skies. It's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. It's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. It's gonna be a bright, bright, sunshiny day.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Lisa, for sharing and directing the epic story of Pericles. The Way I Am Now is produced by myself and Matthew Engst, underscored by Matthew Engst. Vocals by Dion Lee. I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash. This episode is executive produced by Michael Goodfriend and Next Chapter Podcasts. If you're enjoying The Way I Am Now, the podcast, let people know about it. You can follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. Also, if you haven't subscribed already, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you.